And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
All right, welcome into the latest edition. I hear that podcast growling. Paul Daner Jr. of The Athletic here with you as we go live room style on a day where the Bengals beat the Cleveland Browns 31-14. And we're talking about it. You know why? Because the game was ridiculous. It was kind of a, what's the words we're going to use? Fraudulent. Mockery, ridiculous. I mean, the Browns not exactly putting forth much effort. At one point, I believe the yard differential was 224-0. And it was about 14 first downs to zero. And the Bengals were up 21-0. And it was pretty clear what that was going to be and what you would expect it to be. I mean, this is a Browns team that's playing to go forward into the playoffs and not really interested in this, and a Bengals team that is moving on into their season. It ends at 9-8, and we just kind of got out of the locker room, and I thought, you know, I can sit here and we can go through whatever details of this game that we have, and we can, you know, I guess if you want me to talk about Andre Yoshivash's touchdowns or dropped by Tyler Boyd or Joe Mixon crossing 1,000 yards or any of these things that you have interest in, that's fine. I mean, I could do that. But you guys have questions, okay? And so I know that, and I want to hear from you. So I don't know how many of you want to come ask them or what you want to know, but if you have questions, you can drop them here into the chat. Or you can hop into the stage queue and request to speak, and I'll bring you up here, and we'll talk and do a little post-game live room and talk about what is a very interesting and impactful offseason that is in front of the Cincinnati Bengals. And, you know, for right now, you know, we just came back from the locker room, and – Tyler, you know, talked to Tyler Boyd for a little while, a guy who has kind of done everything the right way, and a really good example, I think, of the type of players that you can build around and that you need to give time. I go back, you know, looking at Tyler Boyd's career. And he was a healthy scratch at one point early in his career. And he was kind of viewed as a problem by the coordinator. And there was a wonder if he would ever come around or ever be a team guy. And for him to be kind of a core piece of this run is really remarkable. And I don't, you know, it's probably, you never know. I think he sounded pretty resigned to the fact that, sure, he'd love to come back, but it's business. You don't know. You heard from him from last week if you listened to the podcast on Friday. But, you know, I really think that players like him are just so important. The big three don't work without him, not because he's good. I mean, he obviously is good, but because he didn't complain. He was always third in line behind Jamar and T. But he never complained. And this was the guy that was supposed to maybe be the problem, but you gave him time, a new group of coaches, and it ended up being a new group of receivers. And everything changed around him, but he continued to grow and get better. Don't give up on young players too early. Give them time to mature and grow, because they can end up being players like Tyler Boyd that help carry you and end up one of four players that were there for the duration. And that kind of stuck out to me a little bit today going through the locker room, talking to him. No, T. Higgins was out of there pretty quickly. DJ Reader wasn't around. We had Chidobe Awuzie was inactive today. Of course, we've talked to him and kind of wrote his story a little bit. So a lot of these pieces that are going to be in the mix tomorrow will be in the locker room for locker room cleanout day and a chance to catch up with some other guys and coaches and that type of stuff about where that all goes going forward. But, you know, for now, Bengals finished 9-8. The entire AFC North ends up over 500. First time since 1935 we've seen that for a division. I mean, this was the toughest division there's been. It's funny when you think about it. There's a lot of players talking about how there was just frustration thinking about how close they were to the playoffs and how easy it would have been to make it. And it's true. It ends up being, they just win one of those two Pittsburgh games, beat Kenny Pickett or Mason Rudolph. And they're the team that's in instead of the Steelers. And how close that really was, you know, finding a way to beat Kansas City, whatever it would be. And all of that without Joe Burrow. And so you have the Burrow thing, the Burrow injury of basically five healthy games of him. You still go 9-8. Tough division, insanely tough schedule. That's sort of the floor, I think, for this team and for this franchise right now. And that says something. And there's something good to be taken from that. That said, there's just a lot of change on the horizon. And we'll see where it all lands. You guys have some questions here. I appreciate that. If anybody wants to hop up and ask something specifically to me, just request to hop on stage and I'll pull you up and we'll try to pull you on. Until then, I'll start with your questions. First one from Jeremy D. wants to know, any coaching or personnel changes expected? I think if we're talking about who would be the most likely, you're looking at Dan Pitcher. He's been due. He was close to a job last year. You know, Tampa Bay kind of resurrected themselves a little bit with Baker Mayfield. And so maybe they're keeping a bunch of people there. But I thought as close as he was to Tampa Bay last year, that felt certainly like a landing spot for him, potentially, if there were openings and movement. But, you know, I look at a guy like Dan Pitcher, and to me, he feels like he's next year's Bobby Slowick, right? I mean, the type of guy that you love their background, you love what they are, and they can come in and really take off in an OC role somewhere. I think that's his reputation right now. I think he's ready, and I think he'll have opportunity. That said, I don't know if this season takes the shine off of Lou Anarumo. I think Brian Callahan will still get looks. Brian Callahan, who showed up in that, you know, top five voted by the NFLPA, interviewed their players around the league and asked them all to sort of rate the coordinators. And Brian Callahan finished fourth in that voting as far as most liked by their own players. And, you know, the job that they've been asked to do this year and what they have done over the last couple of years is noted around the league. And they faced a lot of issues this year and were asked to do a lot of things. And they got Jake Browning playing pretty well and found a serviceable offense out of the Joe Burrow disappearance, you know, and having to find something new on the fly and figure out a way to make it work. And they almost did to the point of making it to the playoffs. They didn't. It wasn't good enough. But I think you look at what Jake Browning ended up turning out this season, and you can say there's a lot of good coaching that went on there. So I think Brian Callahan will be in some conversations. But, another part of that is, how many openings are there going to be? How much movement should we expect? There's going to be some, but how much? And that plays into whether there's going to be turnover or not. I think they've clearly, I mean, Zach Taylor, let's be honest, has known this type of stuff has coming and been prepared. He had to be prepared this time last year, thinking there's a good chance he could lose both. And it almost, it almost happened, certainly with Lou. And so, you know, he has ideas of where he wants to go next and what a pipeline looks like and who those people would be. It's just a matter of, you know, seeing what he needs to do and he can call on that. But, you know, I fully expect him to be prepared and have had an idea of what direction he probably wants to go. if that does happen. But that will all start to play out in the coming weeks.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Kind of piggybacking off that below, Michael L. asking if there's going to be a new offensive line or running back coach next season. I don't get the sense, certainly not at running back coach. I don't get the sense that there's an issue with Frank Pollock to the point of a separation. I really don't. That's not been anything that's kind of come up or even been whispered or anything like that, that I've heard. That would be a stunner in my opinion. I think there is a desire from them to bring most everyone back and see how much continuity that they can have. And if that's the case, they feel like they'll be better off for it and they can build on some of the things from this year and make moves because of the failures of this year and that it was a good group. It's been a good coaching staff at communicating and learning from their mistakes and understanding how to evolve and being successful at that. We've seen that specifically in season the last couple of years, but I think this is a chance for them to kind of do that a little bit better off season. And I think that includes the entire coaching staff in general. I don't, sense there being any kind of looking to get rid of anybody. As much as I know people always want heads to roll and that type of stuff, I don't get the impression that that's going to be a part of this. Okay, let's move on. And again, if you would like to, maybe you're sitting at home and you had one too many on a Sunday. I understand not wanting to hop on stage. If you do want to actually ask a question, you can request to talk and ask a question, and it'll put you on stage, and I can call you up in there and bring you on. If not, I'm perfectly fine to go through the chat here, and we'll talk it out and answer a few questions and see where it goes from there. Let's go to Peter R., who has a question up, says, what is our actual cap situation? Lots or not or complicated? Right, kind of new to pro football, learning how the cap works. Appreciate it, Peter. Happy to start there. The Bengals have, via over the cap, $54 million in effective cap space, which is good. They're, I believe, sixth in that ranking as far as six out of 32 in amount of room. Now, there's a difference between, cap space that they supposedly have and what I talk about this effective cap space thing. And that's because they have a lot of spaces to fill and every spot has to have a certain amount of money. They take that into account when they do that math on how much they have, because they have a lot of bodies. They have a lot of free agents. They have a lot of big free agents. They have a lot of very expensive free agents and holes to fill. And when that's the case, $54 million disappears pretty quickly. And they have a couple ways that they can add a little bit of more. They can get themselves to about $60 million in space if they were to cut Joe Mixon. There's other small moves they can make, but there's not a ton of wiggle room to add. And that's okay because there's a decent amount of it, but they're going to have some tough decisions to have to make there. It disappears quickly. I mean, traditionally, the Bengals have viewed their cap space, people always get mad about it, but it's they take into account a lot of the other pieces that go into paying players and getting through a full season. And it usually ends up being about $12 to $15 million less. If you look at the money that you're thinking about, when you think about them going and spending $21 on T and $9 million on DJ Reader. And when you start adding up those, think of it this way. I mean, the Bengals usually spend to about $10 to $15 million less than their effective cap space number, leaving that to account for other things. And so think of it as right now sitting in the 40 range, probably is where you're looking at it. And last year they were in about the 25 range and they did a decent amount of damage there. Orlando Brown being the big fish, obviously, but that will evaporate quickly when you figure out what your decision is between T. Higgins. Jonah Williams is a free agent. Jibe Awuzie, DJ Reader, Tyler Boyd. And then obviously they have holes, defensive tackle near the top of that list. Wide receiver, right tackle, and filling in. You have a no, are they going to try to do something with the safety position to try to help that out, or just let the young guys grow? Are they going to be aggressive at tight end? Are they going to be aggressive at running back? Are they going to start to value those a little bit more? There's a lot of spots, and when you start ticking them all off, depending on how you do it, it can add up very quickly. So it's kind of a quick nutshell of the cap situation. Jake W., a good question for recapping this game. Does Dax Hill stay at safety or move to nickelback? It's crazy that we've reached this point, but I do think it's got to be a point of conversation. It just, there's a couple of things, and I think they came across in the story I wrote about the young secondary this week and kind of talking to everybody and getting engaged. I think there's a very real expectation for a year, starter year one, starter year two jump. I'm fine with that. I'm buying that. There's so many examples. I get it. And I think at a certain point you have to depend on that. You have to depend on development when you are paying your quarterback what you're paying him. And when you're getting into that stuff, when you're feeling limited in cap space, or you want to do something like extend or tag T. Higgins or whatever it is, when those numbers start piling on, you have to have that. You are your drafts, okay? The Bengals right now are a 2021 draft that, besides the first pick and the kicker, has been a massive disappointment. And that came back to bite them this year at times. And last year. And so you're so dependent on those. You have to depend on that. And so I do get that. I do. Dax Hill, DJ Turner, Jordan Battle. You got to count on these guys to get better and become very good. Kansas City was a perfect example of that. You saw that in their defense this year as a bunch of young guys grew and became better. But yeah, this was Dax Hill in a full year in the background, being able to watch, including a full preseason of play, and then another preseason of play, and now a full season of over 1,000 snaps. And you're just seeing the types of mistakes that you just don't expect to see from somebody with that kind of experience, who's a first-round pick. I mean, Jeff Driskel, who was terrible today and is terrible. Sorry, Jeff. It's true. 13 of 26 today for 166, but still has two explosive touchdown passes, both of them victimizing Dax Hill. One, Dax Hill, and DJ Turner. And it just can't be that. And then after the play in Kansas City where he's running the wrong way on the play that Lou Anarumo says he called 400 times, how can you be at that point, 1,000 plays into your second season here? I know it's your first full season as a starter, but you're that far into it, and those types of mistakes are still happening. I think you got to have questions about that. And I would love to be a fly in the room on the wall when they broach that topic over the next month, because I think it'll be fascinating. Are we set with this guy? Is this guy good enough? Do you need to change? Should you address safety and try to maybe move him to a, you know, Swiss Army knife utility player where maybe he's your slot corner of the future? Maybe even try to move him outside. We've seen, they've talked about love for him potentially with a skill set that could play outside. Maybe he's just your third safety right now. I don't know, but I think it's a fascinating conversation, and today didn't help that case. In a day where I didn't necessarily expect to see much come of it, that was certainly something that's hard to miss. Okay, we do have one question on stage. Let me see if we can bring Burke S. up onto the stage, see if we can do that. Burke, are you with me?
I'm going to try one more time. Can you mute yourself? There you are.
How about now?
Go for it.
So I read the story this morning that Zach and Kalen put up about Black Monday. and Marvin Lewis was in that. I know there's no Black Monday coming for this coaching staff, but do you see any changes coming for, like, the defense, especially, like James Betcher or Charles Burks or anything like that for this Bengals staff?
All right, good question.
All right, good question. I appreciate it, Bert.
Thank you very much. I don't know that there will be a fall guy there. It's hard to say specifically when you start getting into position coaches. I mean, Robert Livingston has been here for a long time and quite frankly did a pretty incredible job, in grooming and developing Jesse Bates and bringing them together with Von Bell and the group that was there before that. And this year's took some time to come around and it hasn't clicked as quickly. Is that the coach's fault? I don't buy that necessarily. And again, he's been here so long. I would hesitate to say we would see that. I don't think you're going to see that with James Betcher, who's been Lou Anarumo's right-hand man. Again, this is assuming Anarumo stays, which I think is probably the most likely scenario. I've heard a lot of great things about Charles Burks. Again, in general, I feel like there's a lot of happiness with where the coaching staff is currently at. Now, they may have other opportunities everywhere. Troy Walter's another one that may have big opportunities and could be an OC or take another job. So, again, there's plenty of those out there. But I don't see any fall guys, per se, off of this on the coaching staff.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
All right, next, let's bring Nathan S. up onto the stage. How are you doing, Nathan?
Real good. How you doing, Paul?
Doing great. Thanks for chiming in.
Yeah, no problem. So, one thing that I was wondering is that DJ Reader, his contract being up this year, we had a big portion of the cap allocated to his position. And so I was curious if you think the Bengals will go out in free agency and kind of be using that same kind of portion of the cap towards a defensive tackle, just because I kind of think about Chris Jones and how he's in his last year with Kansas City as well. I just didn't know if that would be something that the Bengals would even broach doing.
That's a great question, Nathan. I appreciate it. Chris Jones, it's easy to sit here and, having been around this team and covered this team for such a long time, you get used to just instantly crossing off things of like, well, they would never do that, But I don't know how you say that as much after what's happened the last couple of years. I mean, they didn't expect to be the type of team that would go out and sign Orlando Brown away from Kansas City, but they were. That opportunity came and they pounced on it because of the way things fell. That was out of their comfort zone, not something we've seen. The largest upfront guarantees, what they paid Burrow in guarantees. I mean, they're doing things all the time that are, you know, unlike them. And I do feel like they like the idea of stealing from Kansas City at any time possible. I don't think that's not a thing. Okay. And so now, Chris Jones, though, that to me, as great as he is, and as much as they would take him in a heartbeat, it's too far away from what they need to build, in that he's just older. He's going to get multi-years. It's going to be huge, and it's paying a massive amount of money to someone who is, you're going to have to pay for them into their mid-30s and at a position where you don't always see a lot of production at that point. Now, there's contracts with older guys I think they would be willing to do potentially, but the one that Chris Jones is going to get, I don't think would happen. Now, the bigger part of your question beyond the Chris Jones conversation, though, that I think is true, is that sure feels like priority one right now. I don't know how it they've got a bunch, but it sure feels like priority one. And I do think you could look and say they need to replicate what they did with DJ Reader when they made him the highest paid nose tackle in football. But, you know, he was a guy who was a culture setter and a game changer, and they loved his skill set coming off his rookie contract, you know, in the prime, and bet on the come there. On a guy growing into a role here, and he did, and he was incredible. And so I think replicating that's on the plate. I think if you're talking about where that could come from, where your big outside free agent could come from, there's no doubt that makes the most sense. I think there's certain parameters they like to live inside of, but it has to be better. They know it has to be better. And there's just no way to find, you're not going to find another DJ Reader, and they have to find something in there. They have to find multiple pieces in there. They need to come in waves. They need a bigger guy. They need a run stopper. They need more pass rush. They need multiple players in there. They need probably a free agent and a draft pick. It's some kind of a mix to build that thing. And there's no question that if we're talking about where the surprise big outside guy could come from, I think that's what you point to. Now, I just, you know, without totally going through it in this moment, you're going to have guys that are going to be cut. You're going to have guys that aren't going to be tagged or surprisingly or whatever. We'll see how that all goes. But know that they're going to be looking, and they're going to be considering a lot of options there. And that's, there's no question. When that something is up there that high on the priority list, you would expect a pretty aggressive targeted plan, if we can learn anything from their recent history in free agency. They've pretty aggressively tapped what they view to be their number one issue. And, go back to offensive line coming out of the 2021 season, right? First 10 minutes of free agency, Kappa and Karras came off the board, and it was, whoa, Bengals are not messing around here. And who knows what would have happened if it wasn't, you know, if you didn't have somebody like Ryan Jensen unavailable or whatever, you know? And so, anyway, all of that aside, that's a great question. It's a great point. And I do think when we look at priorities and we put them in order, I have a hard time not having defensive tackle. In fact, maybe defensive tackle twice at the top of my priority list. And that's knowing how important the other positions they have open are. All right, let me go back to the stage, and then I'll hop into the chat after that for a second. Let's go with Landry S. Up on stage. How are you doing, Landry?
I'm sad the season's over, even if it didn't end the way we wanted it to.
Yeah, you know, the season is over on the field, but really we've only just begun. Because the fun is just beginning, and that's free agency's not that far off. We got the draft around the corner. It never really ends.
Well, I guess we'll see just how fun it is. So I'm taking your word that fun is the correct term there.
Yeah, good point.
My question is, I'm operating under the assumption as if they will either let T. Higgins walk or they will tag him. In my thought process, I just don't see a long-term extension happening. So for this question, that's kind of the parameters. If that is the case, he's here for 1 year or he's done, how do they go about kind of attacking and refilling the wide receiver room? I'd assume if they tag him, they probably don't take receiver in the first round, but you're still going to have to think about life after him next year probably. So how high up in the draft are they willing to take somebody if he's on the roster? And if he is on the roster, are they content to let next year Charlie Jones and Yosef Osh and these guys kind of play wide receiver three, or are they still drafting somebody else to supplement the room anyway?
Great question. I appreciate it. Thanks, Landry. Let me dive in on this a little bit. First of all, know that, as you might expect, I have a lot of tea content coming your way soon. So keep an eye out for that. And we're going to fully flesh out this whole thing from a number of different angles. So this is just going to be the sort of off the top of the dome here, initial gut assessment on where it stands and where I think it goes. I think you're right, Landry, in that the idea of a long-term deal getting done feels unlikely. I just don't see David Mulgeta giving into that, or the Bengals going to the number it would take to get that done at the franchise tag deadline. You know, I think what we know of David is that he is going to push it all the way to the end and use whatever leverage he has. And that means, you know, the last possible moment. And that would mean going to the season and pushing into that type of stuff. So for me, the franchise tag is a fascinating decision that I go back and forth on all the time. I just think you have to consider it for $21+ million. I know it's a lot of money, but you have to consider of, hey, giving a real run with Jamar and T and Joe Burrow next to each other one more time. When you look at what this in the way it's constituted, there's just not another T. And I don't feel like it's really hard to put another great player in the pipeline for next year. I think you can draft if they let him walk, which I have a hard time thinking they're just going to let him walk, but they can't. I mean, you get to the tag deadline and you make your decision, right? You could get a long-term deal done, or you couldn't. You tag him, and at that point, you've probably decided long before that, if you tag him, you are willing to pay him $21 million for 1 year, or you are going to use the week before free agency starts to deal him to someone who wants him and getting better than a third-round comp next year, potentially, if you don't, you know, even if you get that. And so you got to secure some kind of retribution for that. It's been done before. Devontae Adams, the most notable, Jarvis Landry, it's happened. So you're making that decision. That's something they got to go through. But yeah, I see a scenario where they go forward and say, Jamar Chase, Andre Yosef Osh, and Charlie Jones are your starting receivers next year. There would definitely be another player in there. You're certainly using a top pick if he walks. If he stays, I think maybe you're not using your first round pick, but any pick after that, you're using and putting them in the pipeline to be the next guy too. You can't say that Andre Yosef Osh is going to be the guy. And that's with a lot of respect and love for what he has done here. That's just such a massive jump, and there's such a difference that you need to have at that position. And it's how they've won. It's how they built the whole thing. And it's been the way they've leaned since the beginning. And so for that fact, I just think they're going to want to be pretty aggressive there in either keeping him and letting him walk. Just feels like you can't. You can't. You've got to at least get more back for it and be able to fire some draft picks that are high at that. So, again, that's a quick off the dome nutshell. We're going to flesh it out a lot further as we kind of go forward here soon. So keep an eye out for that. And great question. I appreciate it. I'll get to a couple of more and then get out of here. Let's see here what we've gone through. Could Mike Hilton play safety from Mike M? Appreciate that question. You know, Mike, he's kind of played some safety in ways. I mean, the way that they've worked the defense, whether you're talking about rotations, inverts, and some of the third down stuff. I mean, they've kind of done that. I think he can. I think maybe that's an extension for him of his career. And you're thinking, oh, maybe they can do just trade Hilton and Hill for each other, right? Swap spots. I don't see that happening. I mean, I think he's best. He proved himself as still a more than viable slot corner this year. And you can hold on to that. And he gives you a real weapon. And he's still got it there. I think you're sticking with that. I don't know that you're making – I think he could. And he still does in some ways. But I don't see that being, you know, a move for him here. Let's see. Defensive line. We kind of touched on that. Let's go O-line question. I'm going to try to hop in on one of these. Thank you, John, with a nice comment about this year. I certainly have missed having Jay on the show as well, and it's much harder to keep it all going and make it work. But I appreciate all of you guys that have stayed listening and you know, bear with me when you have to listen to me talk on a live room, and hopefully this doesn't come across like the live room where everyone was worried I had a stroke. That was bad. Whatever the connection was happening with my AirPods, hopefully that's not happening now. I feel very healthy and fine in case it is happening right now. So don't need to send any concerning messages, but appreciate you guys with that have stuck with me all this year, because it certainly has been fun. One more here. Given we only go as far as Joe takes us, what's his prognosis for returning to training? What's your sense of his state of mind for 2024 from Patrick? Good one to wrap up on. Hang on to that. I think we're going to get Burrow tomorrow. At least that's the rumor mill, to talk on locker cleanout day. And so, you know, he's been here. He's around. He's a frustrated IR guy. Like when you're hurt and your season's over and you got to get to watch everybody else play, it's hard to be, you know, out there and into it. And he's been around. He's certainly more involved than most, but he's still a guy who's frustrated that he's not able to play and has to sit back and watch. It's just not easy for anybody. So his state of mind, it's hard to necessarily tap into that. I'm sure he's stewing and ready to come back and shut up all the haters, because that's kind of the way he's wired and operates. I think the expectation is that he'll be back and throwing this offseason and be part of it and certainly be a full – the expectation is, he's going to knock on wood and hope that this is finally the year that he has a full, healthy training camp and can enter the season right, and they won't have to start behind the eight ball as they have seemingly every single year. That's their hope. But you never know. You still got to get back. You still got to get through everything. You got to survive whatever organ is going to explode, or, you know, tendon's going to rupture, or whatever it is, or, you know, who knows what it's going to be. We're going to go. You just, at this point, I hesitate to even guess. We've been through so many of these types of things now. So, but that is the hope. Important word of today, I guess, would be hope. That's what they got. And a 9-8 record. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening and for hanging out and doing a live room with me here on a Sunday. Hope y'all having a good one. I will have plenty of off-season preview content coming your way. Plus, I'm starting to tinker and dive around in the mock off-season worksheet. Oh, man. Oh, it smells like Excel in here. That's right. Spreadsheets, baby. It's almost here. So excited about that. So many of the things that we love to do with the off-season look ahead is coming your way. And this is a very unique one. So keep an eye out for that. And appreciate all of you hanging with me this year. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And have a good one.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.